From NPR in Los Angeles, I'm Tavis Smiley. On today's program, our provocative conversation with an African-American woman who made an interesting discovery about the so-called issue of colorism among light and dark-skinned people. Michael Eric Dyson comments on the spirituality and eroticism of Motown legend Marvin Gaye, and saxophonist Huge Groove drops by to serenade us with his smooth jazz tunes. But first, race and the environment. The term environmental racism referred originally to the dumping of hazardous waste in or near communities of color. But it also refers to the overall contamination of Black, Latino, Native American, and for that matter, poor white communities from power plant emissions and other sources. Since 1982, when Black residents of small towns throughout the South united to stop trucks carrying toxic PCBs to landfills in their neighborhoods, increasing numbers of African Americans have become involved in the environmental justice movement. Now, many activists say their presence is needed more urgently than ever, and they point to the environmental policies of the Bush administration, which they describe as dismal, as the reason why. But is this a fair assessment of the administration's environmental record? I'm joined on this Earth Day by Barry Hill, the director of the EPA's Office of Environmental Justice. Barry is in our Washington headquarters. Barry, nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Davis. How are you doing today?
I'm well. And yourself?
Good, good.
Also with us today from Maryland, Vernice Miller Travis, co-founder and board member of West Harlem Environmental Action, a grassroots environmental justice organization. Vernice, nice to have you on.
Thank you, Travis.
Let me start with you, Vernice. How much of a priority do you think this administration has placed on environmental justice as compared, say, to past White House administrations?
I would say, Travis, that there's virtually no comparison between the efforts that were put forth by the Clinton-Gore administration versus the Bush-Cheney administration in advancing environmental justice and increasing protection for underrepresented communities, for those who have been most impacted by adverse public health impacts, by environmental issues. There's absolutely no comparison. If we had time, we could go down the record and tick them off, but generically speaking, this has been a dismal, dismal time for people of color and environmental protection.
Let me ask you, because we don't have time, to your point, to do the whole litany of things that bother you, let me ask you to tell me what is most troubling overall about the way this administration has, or to your point, has not handled these important environmental justice issues as you see it.
Well, I would say that I think what the Bush administration has neglected to understand is that the Environmental Protection Agency is a public health agency that has enforcement powers. It is not just an agency that sits and looks at a panoply of issues and makes edicts. Its role is to protect public health and the environment. And there is absolutely no evidence that this administration is interested in protecting public health or in promulgating stronger enforcement of environmental laws. There's just no evidence that that is the case.
Barry, I assume that you see it differently.
Yes, to a certain extent, Tavis. I would have to say that in many respects, we would like to have more progress take place with respect to the issue of environmental justice. But at the same time, you can see that progress has been made. I'll give you an example. In August of 2001, the EPA administrator, for the first time, wrote that environmental justice is a major commitment, a major priority of the agency, and that there would be a focusing on environmental laws and the implementing regulations to address environmental justice issues, environmental justice considerations throughout the country. This was the first time that something like that had ever been done, regardless of administration. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, Tavis, the EPA, its administrator, took a giant step as it relates to trying to integrate this issue into the daily decision-making processes of the agency, and that was a major step. Mm.
And yet respectfully, it seems to me to be one thing for the EPA administrator to say it's going to be a priority, yet another to make it a priority. I note now, Barry, a recent New York Times article entitled "Changing All the Rules," which cited efforts by the EPA to alter laws affecting power plant emissions and thus contributing to worsening air quality. If this is true, why is the EPA changing the rules, and how might a rule change like this affect particularly communities of color?
Well, the New York Times article focused on the AIR program and what's happening as far as emissions trading and other things related to major problems as it relates to clean air in this country. And it really talked about the use of the regulations or interpretations of the regulations rather than new laws that need to be enacted by Congress. That's been an issue. And from the point of view of minority and or low-income communities, there is concern. The Office of Environmental Justice is involved in the discussions, and we are providing advice and recommendations to the agency on how best to address the concerns of those communities.
Bernice?
Tavis, if I may, though,
sure.
If the Office of Environmental Justice is providing advice to the agency, then the agency is clearly not listening, because those on the front lines of this particular issue is extremely important to communities of color, because they often live at the fence line next to, adjacent to, these power plants. And so these emissions have direct implication on our lives, on our ability to breathe. And if the agency is not going to enforce the law, and in fact the agency has no interest in this current administration in enforcing new source review, which is what the article was about in the New York Times, the people who are going to suffer first and foremost are going to be communities of color. And I would just say, for those of us who live in northern Manhattan, I now live in Maryland, but used to live for 40 years in northern Manhattan and Harlem, we have among the highest premature death rate from asthma in the Western Hemisphere. Controlling power plant emissions is essential to our ability to live as human beings in this country. And so this issue about they're giving advice and consent to the agency is not listening. The agency is not listening to its own Office of Air and Radiation that wants to see full enforcement of these regulations.
Barry, let me ask a pretty simple question, and I assume that the EPA accepts, underscore that word, that the EPA accepts some culpability here, because they do have now established an Office of Environmental Justice. I know it's obviously not called the Office of Environmental Racism, but certainly at least there is an office now called the Office of Environmental Justice, which you head, of course. So I assume that there's some culpability here, but let me just ask why it is, if not racism, why is it then that poor and minority communities are more often than not the host of these so-called dirty industries?
Tavis, the phrase was coined, as you said earlier, back in 1982. The Office of Environmental Justice was established in 1992, mm-hmm. and at that time it was called the Office of Environmental Equity, and since that time it was changed to the Office of Environmental Justice. It, in many respects, the title of the office has changed to reflect the maturation of the issue.
Sure.
What we're dealing with right now is trying to ensure that all of the laws, all of the policies, all of the guidances are, let's say, enforced equally, regardless of who lives in those communities. Vernice has an excellent point. There's no question that minority and low-income communities have suffered disproportionately. There have been many, many studies that reflect that particular fact. What we're trying to do as best we can is to address those particular issues and trying to ensure that environmental justice considerations are reflected in the day-to-day decisions of the agency.
Bernice, let me ask you, Bernice. It's one thing to talk to an administrator, and I'm glad that Barry's on the program. It's another thing, it seems to me, to put African-American elected officials. There are now more black folk elected around this country than at any point in our country's history. There are almost 40 members of the Congressional Black Caucus. How have lawmakers, particularly African-American lawmakers, made progress or not, as it were, with regard to this issue of environmental justice?
Well, Tavis, that's such an excellent question, because on the one hand, the Congressional Black Caucus has by far and away the strongest voting record in terms of favoring the existence or the creation of environmental regulations, enforcing them, making sure that they're budgeted appropriately, that they have the appropriate staff at EPA and other agencies that have oversight over these issues. The Congressional Black Caucus has taken an absolute leadership on these issues. But to be fair, In the aggregate, they have really stepped up and responded to these issues. But at the local level, they have, in many instances, not been the aggressors and allowed local government to really move the agenda. And sometimes it is local government that is really responsible for these problems in these communities of color. It's local government that controls the local land use and zoning process, that puts these facilities or maintains them or gives new permits for construction of new facilities in communities of color and low-income communities. So, and I think that's, you know, that's sort of the way it works, that the Congress members deal on the federal level and they leave local efforts to local and state government. But local and state government oftentimes are complicit in the problem or, in fact, are the source of the problem. So we need Congress members to play a more direct role in what's happening on the ground in their congressional districts.
Barry, let me ask you, speaking of complicity here, I ask this question not because you are part of a Republican administration, but whether the White House is occupied by, the Oval Office, that is occupied by Republican or Democrat, it seems to me that perhaps corporations have an undue amount of influence on the administration's issues or lack thereof at EPA during any point in time. Barry?
Tavis, is that a statement or a question?
It's both, I guess.
Well,
care to comment right quick?
Tavis, I'm a career employee, and what I'm essentially trying to do is to ensure, regardless of who's sitting in the White House, that this issue is addressed fairly and appropriately.
All right, Bernice, let me ask you then, in 30 seconds, is the issue being addressed fairly? This is a question. Do corporations, Republican or Democrat administrations, have so much influence that the issue of environmental racism becomes even more difficult to address adequately?
Absolutely. And the clean air issues are sort of paramount in that discussion, as well as energy issues, as well as trying to promulgate new regulations around reducing mercury emissions. It is so very clear, and it has been documented in so many fora, that industry is driving the agenda. And I tell you who's not at the table in large number are those who live in communities that are most directly affected by these policies. We are not being invited into the conversation. The environmental community has been almost locked out of the deliberations. And this is, you know, this is untenable and unexcusable in a democratic society.
I have to stop this conversation right here. Vernice Miller-Travis, I thank you. Barry Hill of the EPA, I thank you both for coming on. Happy Earth Day to both of you.
Thank you.
Same
Pat.
To you. Take
it's
care. Bye-bye.
It's my pleasure.